For August 22, 2025, we talk about Nine Kings, Threshold, Voxelgram, and much more. Welcome to Level 555. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. This is the same crew we had last time, so I have nobody to call out specifically.
Someone jump on this grenade.
So now I'm lost. Here's a thing. Let me double check and make sure. I should have done that. This is professional. I'm good at my job. No episode.
You're gonna start reading off our social security numbers?
No. That's just those are in the show notes. Yeah.
No show next week. Why?
What's next week?
Oh no, I'm just not gonna be around to record it. So
all right. Sweet. Fair enough.
Yep. Yeah. So I got some good news. My gender marker change was approved. We talked about it a little bit in the green room, but that's really the big thing that went through for me. So I've got to gather up my documentation. I've got to go to the DMV to get the actual change done. But I also need to get like my birth certificate and stuff, because I need to get the real ID so I can go to Portland in October for PRGE.
So this is a different thing from getting your birth certificate change, or is this that?
This is separate. The real ID, I guess, is like the super special identification that you need to get in order to fly within the country. I don't know.
You know, in retrospect, when I got the real ID thing, like that just seemed like, oh, they've got a new security thing with like everything. It's like, huh, that seems vaguely sinister.
Yeah, it's weird to need a passport to fly domestically. Mm-hmm. Right?
Wait,
I don't know.
You don't. I mean, need a passport to fly domestically.
No, I mean, not literally. They're different documents, but like you need to provide a lot of the same stuff to get the real ID that you do to for your passport.
All right, you guys want to hear something crazy?
Sure.
This is the kind of privilege you get in America if you are white and also a very cute girl. Jen was like, you know, going on a business trip, forgot her passport and her ID. The only like identification she had on her going to the airport was like her credit card. And the TSA person was like,
that's why pencil have erasers. That's fine.
If I ever had any illusions about all the like crazy security that's at airports being effective, it just shattered it right there.
We're not looking for you. We're not looking for you. That's fine. That's fine.
I've heard stories like that where it's like people forget their stuff, and like the worst I've heard is like you have to sign like an affidavit saying you are who you claim to be, and then they'll let you through. But yeah, that seems weird. But yeah, I imagine it's very much on the eye of the beholder in that situation. So
That TSA agent was having a good day or something, but go figure.
Ben, how about you? What you been up to?
Not too much. Trying to log my memory of what I've done over the past week. I don't think I've seen any movies in the past week. I just hung out with my partner's friends over the weekend for the most part.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it is weird how on Tuesdays the weekend is a black hole, and as if it did not exist. Oh, this is something I can talk about. I've been watching On Cinema at the Cinema.
Oh, shit, you're in for a ride.
Wait,
how far are you?
I'm already on the last season, I think. So I've gone a good way through, but it was because somebody recommended The Trial of Tim Heidecker to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you ever want to spend like 20 hours to get a 5-hour joke, then that's that's worth your time, I guess.
On Cinema at the Cinema is like a web series that's been going for, I think it's like, I don't even know how many seasons they're up to. It's Tim Heidecker from Tim and Eric and Greg Turkington, who you have seen in things, kind of an all comedian guy. And
I would love that to be like, my, like, you know how some celebrities have like a state merit title that goes with them? I would love to have mine be like who you have seen in things.
You have, I assure you. But it's them, it's fictionalized, them playing fictionalized versions of themselves, reviewing movies, but that's not what happens. Mostly it is their lives falling apart and them driving each other crazy
in different ways. Yeah One person who presents as an asshole and one person who's secretly an asshole
who is secretly one of the worst people to ever exist.
Yeah
you either die a Greg head or you live long enough to become a Tim head.
Yeah, anyway, so that's a good ride. Trial of Tim Heidecker is it's quite
a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. Did you watch the full version or did you?
I watched the full version. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
How much of your life did you throw at this?
It's something. It's something I've been doing in the mornings. It's like a morning ritual, is watching that for an hour. So,
I need to. So, like, I stopped. Did you watch the Oscar specials?
I have. I'm like maybe a season or two from what I think is at least the end of the playlist, which goes up to like 2019 or so. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much is after that. But yeah.
So is Tim Heidecker the person I should recognize in things?
Probably.
Tim Heidecker is, I think, more famous from television shows. It's the other guy, it's Greg, who's been in, like, he's been like a character actor in some stuff.
I was just gonna say Tim Heidecker, like, I don't mean this to like be racist, but he makes a strong case for like all white people look alike.
If you see him talk and stuff, he has a real distinct kind of affect to him.
Okay. At least in still pictures, he just looks like every white dude.
Like a dude. Yeah.
A fun a fun side benefit of this too is since the show starts in like 2011, 2010, somewhere around there, like watching the entire series is kind of like this weird time capsule where, you know, it's like they start to lean into like stuff like Trump stuff in like 2014, 2015. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just funny seeing that with like dramatic irony, I guess. Funny is a weird word to describe that, but yeah.
What's very fun is Tim is almost always like a couple of years ahead of where it's going to go, of where that stuff is going to go.
Yeah.
So like, you know, yeah. Did you watch the movie? Did you watch Mr. America?
I have not.
There's a movie that is related to his run for San Bernardino San Bernardino County DA.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, is this real life or
it's fictionalized?
Okay. I'm just gonna say because like at this point, I would believe anyone could hold any political position.
We are right. Firmly beyond parody.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Sorry, I can talk about this a lot.
Oh no, I mean,
we haven't even gotten into Decker and Dakar. They're different things.
Man, I actually for absurd movie experiences, I've got something.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I went and saw The Naked Gun.
I need to see that. I need to go see that before it leaves theaters.
Yeah, I mean, so. It is firmly not a movie you have to see in the theaters, right? Like,
I want to pay to see it in a theater so more comedies get made.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I can get behind that. It is the first like true comedy, like slapstick, throwaway jokes, stupid sight gags comedy that's been in theaters since I can remember.
That's been in theaters since they stopped making Naked Gun.
But it is absolutely amazing from you know, the first scene, from the title card, literally from the title card. It is just so freaking packed with jokes that you almost don't want to laugh because you'll, you know, in the time it takes you to laugh, you will miss two or three gags.
Nice.
And so I kind of, you know, I want to see it again at some point because I'm sure I missed every other joke in there.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated that the movie was under 90 minutes long, but it was just like wall to wall with jokes.
Yes. Yes.
No comedy needs to be over 90 minutes.
No. And that is also a welcome reprieve from our 3-hour Oppenheimer Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
New normal that I'm not okay with.
No.
But, it, you know, went and saw it. There were 4 people in the theater, including me.
Okay.
Jen and I made up half the audience. And I think I laughed enough to cover it, like right. By far.
I always go to movies like in the morning on weekdays. So like I'm always the person alone, and that's fine for a horror movie or whatever. I'm gonna feel like an asshole sitting alone in the theater laughing like that. But
yeah, see, a horror movie,
just,
I know.
You just gotta go for it. Just gotta go
that,
for it.
Yeah. That just creeps me out way too much. Like I know being in at a movie theater like, you know, during the day, that sort of thing is just way too much. What they call it, like liminal spaces or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
It is weird how people are very divided on this, where it's like either going to a concert alone or going to a movie theater alone. Like some people are completely okay with it, and some people are like, cannot do it at all.
In both of those situations, you're basically alone anyway, is my is my kind of thing.
Like, that's actually I don't know. This is weird. that's actually like something I've tried to explain to people because like having lived both in like massive cities and very rural areas, I know a lot of people in rural areas who are like, oh, I could never live in the city. You know, you'd never be alone. It's like, oh no, you are never more alone than you are in a major city.
Yeah,
like
the American instinct to leave each other the fuck alone is universal, right?
Yes. Yes.
Some exceptions apply. Yeah.
Except for the 1% that just make everyone else miserable. Yeah. But yeah, so highly recommend and God, I hope we get to see more like this. I think, you know, there's been lots of very funny movies. I think of like Everything Everywhere All at Once is probably the last like very funny movie or absurdly funny movie that I can think of before The Naked Gun. But this is just so gleefully and unabashedly funny and pretty much nothing else.
Yeah.
That it landed very, very nicely. So,
I love that they got Liam Neeson for it. You know, someone who could actually make an action movie, but instead is making a parody of action movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Pamela Anderson coming out of retirement. you know, doing her first role in a long time does amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, yeah, it is a bunch of people. You can get the sense when the actor wants to be there and is having fun.
Right.
It's just, it's impossible to quantify, but you know, and it is clear that Liam Neeson and everyone around him is just loving every second of this.
I'm sorry. You mispronounced his name.
Leslie Nelson.
No, Liam Neeson's.
What did I
say? It's a Key and Peele thing.
Is this sort of like
the rural juror?
Oh no, I was thinking it's like attorneys general. You know, he's Liam's niece or Neeson's Liam.
Yeah, you have to put an S on the end. It's Liam Neeson's.
Yeah. Aha. Yeah. Yes. So good times in the movie theater for me as well.
Cool. Moxie, how about you? Pass is fine.
I am doing all right. I am living through interesting times here in Washington, D.C.
So. I think about that. I think about like, oh, you just moved there. And then, I mean, it's almost like spookily correlative. It's like they did this to fuck you over.
I mean,
I know that it's hitting.
I maintain that if I move to a city and start playing a Division game, just like woe will befall it. You know, it worked for COVID.
Yeah.
So that's my working theory.
Oh, geez.
Okay, I thought you were going to go the other direction. So like, wait a second. Has anyone seen Moxie and all of Ice in the same room together?
I have no idea how they do it. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But yeah. No, it's... we were talking some beforehand. It's just, I haven't seen a ton. I've seen some direct, you know, seeing more stuff around. But mostly so far, it's just the vibe shift of the city is really, really stands out.
I would not. Fuck. Okay, this is me saying this. I was about to say, I wouldn't want to be going out an awful lot. Then I pause and think, yeah, no, I wouldn't, regardless.
It's weird that it's like a localized 2020 going on over there, you know?
Like sporadically. Just all over, you know, in different places, and coming soon to a bunch more. Mm.
It's a weird inverse Naked Gun where it is equally absurd, but it's clear that nobody is having fun or wants to be there.
Mm-hmm. Right. God.
No laughs.
Well,
yeah, and this doesn't justify or anything, but like, it's even amazing watching some of the like, videos of like some of the FBI agents going on like basic like traffic stops, and just the look on their face of like, what the hell am I doing?
That guy on TV saying, yeah, we're not gonna let you smoke weed or drink on your porch anymore. It's like, that's my motherfucking private property. Yeah. You don't know the laws. Like, yeah. I can do that on my property.
And also, like, the added context of that of a bunch of white dudes going up to a group of black people to do that. It's like...
Oh, it's almost the only context. Yeah.
Yep. Well, Sandwich Man, though. I mean, we can all laugh about that, so...
Yes. Yeah. I hope that they cannot find a jury for him.
Honestly, I've got to imagine, like, what would that jury even look like? Because, like... Even not even talk about like, oh, politically, could you get people to not convict them? But just like, it's really funny. Like, how are you going to get a jury to take it serious enough to convict him?
I think we can all agree funny crime shouldn't be illegal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fair.
It's the Peter Griffin defense of Your Honor. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else going on besides hell?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some video games, try and lighten things up here for a moment or two. To do that, we have to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Who has something new?
I do.
Okay, Dennis, go.
I have something so new, it's a preview. Haha. It is a little like auto battler / roguelite / tower defense / deck builder game.
Is this the one you texted me about?
Yes, it's called Nine Kings.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And this popped up on Game Pass. I know that the like all those terms I threw out there probably have everyone shutting off their ears and being like, oh god,
I don't know what just the fucking like, auto battler is, and at this point I'm too afraid to ask.
It is exactly what it sounds like, for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm. And this one is really gotten its hooks into me in a way that, you know, I've bounced off of other things, it basically, you start out with a 3x3 plot of land, and can place your castle on one square, and then you'll draw three cards. And every year you play one card, and then your troops go out to battle, and then you get to pick one of three new cards. And those cards can be troops or buildings that you all, you know, each of those occupies a plot of land. And everything kind of levels up and interacts with each other and gives bonuses based on what it's next to.
Okay.
The translation then is like, you know, as you're kind of laying out your city to give the maximum bonuses, it is then tested every year in how well they kind of go out and do battle. You have one unit, and you always have this like at the start to place your castle, that allows you to directly interact with the battle. And each king has something different. Like the first one has a giant catapult that lobs like an area of effect thing. One has a lightning strike that just calls down and instantly kills one enemy. And if you wait a little bit, an enemy will be highlighted in gold. And so like, you know, you sacrifice a little bit of DPS for getting some money if you kill the golden enemy.
Okay.
And you know, each one has a twist and theme, and it's like, you know, the king of blood, the king of greed, the king of, taxes. I don't know. so you kind of build to the strengths of each of them, in a given run. And try to get your city as strong as possible to eventually face a final boss that has a gigantic army and a champion unit that's incredibly powerful.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this is like peak fun systems, not too difficult, and you are able to just break it wide open.
That's how you pitched it to me.
In yes.
Kind of comparison to a game I talked about last week, Merge Maestro.
Mm-hmm. No. Yes, where you know, it is clear the devs are not afraid of you know, leveling something up to the point that it attacks 7,000 times in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, base attack is like once every other second or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's pretty much my palate cleanser for the other game I've been playing, which is Elden Ring. I continue to make progress in.
Okay.
And I'll, not that there's any comparison between the two, but, you know, when I've gotten to Liondell, and there's lots of times where I, you know, build up like 20,000 souls and then lose them.
Yep.
And to be able to rage quit out and go play Nine Kings for a bit is the perfect palate cleanser.
Like, yeah.
It is a great decompression game.
You gotta have something to bounce to. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then, you know, a run of Nine Kings goes about a half hour. And at that point, I'm ready for more Elden Ring. And the cycle continues.
You can give yourself a little reset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so very fun little pixel art style. You know, when each unit is like 3x5 sprites or 3x5 pixels, it can get a little hard to tell what's going on in the middle of a battle. Especially if your castle is one of the ones that like comes out onto the battlefield. So some of the one is actually like a flying castle that UFOs out over the battlefield. And that blocks like 50% of what's going on at any given time. So not super precise, not super high resolution. But you know, it gets the point across just well enough. It is kind of, on the theme of these like armies clashing, totally accurate battle simulator kind of feel to it. As you watch these units duke it out, that it's kind of hard to tell what's going on at an individual level.
Is there a story to it?
Not that I can tell. So every time you start, it gives you a year, and the year is a 3-digit number. It's like somewhere in the 500s to 800s I've seen most often. And I think it might be a seed. I don't know. I haven't seen the option for a seeded run. So yeah, not quite sure on that front. It is also, like I said, it's a game preview. It's an active development. I went into it literally today, and they had completely overhauled like the persistent upgrade system. So something I was going to complain about was like, there are some, you know, you level up your kings and then you can spend those points on perks. And there's some perks that feel like just obvious mandatory. And then there's some perks that feel kind of useless to the point of either shoehorning you into a very specific strategy or just quit the run and start over.
It's like based on the new trap, right?
Yeah, kind of. But they changed it. So they completely changed the way you select the perks, but it didn't seem to address that core issue. Like there's some perks where it's like, well, I'm never going to not have that equipped. And then there's some perks where it's like, this is an easy dump. Why would ever I want this? But they like completely changed the UI layout, and now the perks can like, now the perks are on a 9x9 grid, just like your city is. So maybe there's going to be something there.
Yeah. So yeah, it's aggressively in early access.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The core of what's there is extremely fun though. It does not feel unfinished. there are many difficulty modes. The highest I've unlocked so far is King, which I would guess maybe is the top, but I could see it going higher. It starts like, you know, peasant, knight, lord, duke, prince, king, you know, that kind of deal. And
it's testing you how much Crusader Kings you've played.
Yes. It is nice though, because, you know, as I'm unlocking additional kings as well, every difficulty that you've unlocked on one king applies to another. And so it's very easy to like, okay, well, this one's new. I don't have any perks yet. I'll set it to kind of like count difficulty as a good starting place.
Yeah.
And then if I'm playing a king that I've, you know, unlocked a bunch of stuff for, I'll put it up on the higher difficulties. I have yet to beat King, but we shall see what happens. Hmm. Yeah. So that's nine kings.
I'm curious like how disparate the strategies you can make are across runs in the game. Like, are you doing wildly different things, or is it just like you're subbing out verbs that do kind of the same thing?
You are. I think just broadly by the nature of the game, you are always either trying to break the number of units you have or how quickly they attack. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily always true. So one run, I had a mushroom plot that would shoot a spore out onto the battlefield. And those spores were persistent between years. Mm. And I got two of them early on, and then decided to make all of my troops high HP but zero attack. Mm. So there's like a defender troop that just takes damage and reflects back some of it. Mm-hmm. But because they were so high HP, they sat out in the middle of those mushroom turrets for a long time, and that's how I killed people.
Right.
And so by the end of that game, I mean, it was kind of a have a lot of troops strategy. Just it was kind of a tower that made more towers instead of troops technically. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, walls of mushrooms on either side of the field, just pouring projectiles into the enemy while all my other troops were purely in service of just being meat shields. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the more unique ones. The other one is there's a King of Greed I mentioned that, their units, some of their units get more powerful, the more gold you earn. And so I just very early on took a couple things that allowed me to generate a lot of gold, yeah, and then focused on like, don't buy anything, just stack wealth. And that was enough to get me through. technically, that's because it boosted my attack speed to an insane level.
Yeah, yeah.
There's other things. There are perks you can get, like you can stack buffs of like, oh, the first hit is zero damage against this troop. And you can stack that like nine times, and then you're basically like your troop is invincible, or your troop's first hit is a critical hit, and that one, you know, that could mean they're doing insane amounts of damage on the first attack and kind of wipe half the field. I've done that as well, but ultimately the big thing is that, or it feels like the game is designed around, you are going to be leveling up the attack speed of your troops, and you're going to be leveling up the amount of troops there are. And then you need to put like another twist on top of that to make it click into place. And that twist could be any one of a number of things, but every successful run I've had is just those two plus some other factor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The buildings differentiating against the soldier units or whatever seems like a very intuitive thing, and how you can like upgrade our ability there. So like that part seems cool, or it seems like it has potential, but yeah, I feel like this all like shakes out with like how good the design is and the balance. So.
Yeah. I think the other big thing is that, so you lose a life if the enemy reaches your castle. Mm. So you're always going to want to have the castle in the back row. But that also kind of pushes you away from purely building-based strategies, because enemies will always stop to kill a troop. Once all the troops are gone, they will run past all the buildings. Even though, like I mentioned, there are mushroom turrets you can have in the field. There are flamethrower siege engines that you can roll out, and those all just get ignored. And so you kind of need that base of troops just to slow down the enemy enough. Mm-hmm. It is a very easy game to kind of grok what the idea is and play around with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm still enjoying it, like I said, as a palate cleanser. as I'm getting into the higher difficulty levels.
Yeah. It sounds like the perk system needs work, but also they are working on it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And they just, in addition to the perk system rework, they added a new king that I have yet to check out. So that is very exciting. Seems to be based around plot destruction, where, like I said, you've got that 3x3 grid. You can expand it out to 4x4, although it's rare to be able to do it all the way. And it'll be interesting to see, like, that's probably your most scarce resource. So it's interesting to see a king and be like, oh, that seems to be designed around blowing up your most scarce resource. How's that going to work?
It's like getting a bunch of short. Yeah. That makes sense.
And what is the king of?
King of Nomads.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, makes sense.
Get it? Destroy all your land. Ha 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 ha. Yeah. So that's nine kings. And then I'm trying to think. Oh, any other questions on that before I move on to a brief Elden Ring update? Did you guys see the video that my chair just lost its hydraulic pressure?
Yeah, it happened kind of did it happen slowly?
it was maybe slowly for a long time and then just like a...
Yeah, no, I was...
At the end. I feel like a toddler sitting at the mic all of a sudden. Anyway, yeah.
Need a booster seat.
Yeah, maybe. That's the more elegant solution. Elden Ring. So like I said, I'm in the main city of Liondale. And... For the longest time, I guess, is there only one way into the city? Because I came in via the east rampart, had to go all the way around the walls.
And there's only one. Yeah, there's only one way in because you have to have two of the great runes to do it. Technically, maybe there's a way you can get in if you go through the, I don't know, if you go through deeper depths. Part of me, it's been forever since I've thought about this. Part of me thinks that there's a way to go up through deeper depths and the subterranean shunning ground to get up through the well.
But yeah,
that is so much harder.
I found that connective tissue. But it's funny. There's that bonfire on the east ramparts. It's like your starting point there.
Yeah,
the city. And then they do their most intense rendition of like, oh, everything's going to unlock to take you back to this starting point.
Yeah.
And I think I just poked just far enough in enough directions without finding a bonfire to start really hating that East Rampart bonfire.
Yeah.
This fucking place again.
There's a bonfire down in one of the districts that used to be flooded. That is you can do. It's like in a church down there. I don't know that it's that preferable.
So yeah, I eventually did find more bonfires, and none of them were insane amounts of far away or like super hard to find.
Yeah,
it just so happened that I like stopped pushing in a given direction and was like, this is hopeless. I got to go somewhere else.
And there was one just like right around the corner.
Yeah. I think there might be an item for that. Like, I forget what it's called, where you like, you use the item and it'll give you the little grace twinkles towards the nearest fire.
I never used anything like that or relied on
it. If that doesn't exist, that would be, I don't know if that'd be useful in Elden Ring, but it would be useful in like most, like Bloodborne and stuff.
Yeah.
But so eventually, after all that exploring, the first bonfire that I did find was technically in that like under sewer, whatever area. So I was like, this one doesn't count. It's not in.
It's the beginning of a whole new dungeon. Yeah.
But yeah, I've said it before. Elden Ring shines the most when it is in its like bespoke level format instead of its open world format.
Yeah.
It's almost like open world was a major mistake.
I don't know about that. My map is filling up with markers of like, here's an interesting thing to check out that I was too afraid to approach at this point.
It's nothing but skull icons everywhere.
this was a one-way teleport that I noped out of. and all that stuff.
What level's your character right now?
I want to say in the 80s.
Okay.
Or maybe that's the 60s. Yeah,
but I'm sure you said what build.
For the first time, I've done a magic build. You might have not been on the initial
episode.
That's
right. No. Okay. It's the magic build. Yeah.
So very, very magic based, and then carrying around a rapier for when that runs out.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually led to an incredibly fun moment where, you know, usually the older boys are downstairs and playing. If I am, it's like the only way I can squeeze it in.
Yeah.
And they'll be doing Fortnite or Rocket League or whatever. But Luke kind of, for whatever reason, like popped up and he wandered around and was looking at my screen, I think was just intrigued by what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so started watching me. And every, you know, every attack that you barely dodge out of the way of, he was doing the like flapping, the like,
yeah,
like, rearing back and being very nervous for me, but also like really excited and into it. So that made everything that much more fun. This was one of those deep runs when I had not yet found a bonfire and I burnt through all my mana. Right as I got to, there's like, if you go down that main street and then to the left, there's one of those like lion beasts that have a sword gauntlet type of deal. Mm-hmm. That attack you. So like mini boss fight chasing me all over the level and I don't have my main resource for defeating him.
I fucking hate those lions so
much. Oh my god. They, and if you're a magic user, they jump out of the way of every single spell you cast.
Oh like yeah,
they,
yeah.
Their side jump is perfect for dodging missiles.
Yeah.
But this like, oh, go ahead.
A tip on that. If,
yes.
If it's the one that I'm thinking of where you're headed up and you're like encountering him in a graveyard, kind of like headed up, that's the wrong way to go. You don't want to go that way.
Okay. Yes. I actually did wind up finding kind of a dead end there.
Yeah.
And then, the door on the main street, or the door at the end of the main street, is a dead end. It doesn't open.
Yeah.
I wound up finally, the last time I played, I figured out, oh, you can climb the dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was actually at the end of the session where Luke was watching me and we had this great aha moment together.
Wait, isn't that just a euphemism, climbing the dragon?
That's chasing the dragon is what you're thinking of.
Yes, this is all, Elden Ring is all an elaborate metaphor for
opium addiction.
Nope. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, what's his
bonfires
face?
Bonfires are the save point, you know?
Man.
Anyway, so, you know, I'm out of mana. This thing is coming in. I'm like, this is probably not going to end well. And I think I might have said as much to Luke. He's like, no, you got it. There's one area where, like, there is a garden with a gazebo in it that's, like, sunken in with the rest of the walk around it. And if you jump, you can get to the top of the gazebo, and then you have to drop down to the garden. Well, I you know, fighting this lion, running out of mana, jump, and the lion follows me down there. And so it's on the ground, and I'm above. So I start furiously digging through my item inventory. I've basically ignored items this entire time.
Right, right. So you have just like a ton of throwables, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And start blowing through every single throwable I've got. But of course, since it's a hyper-aggressive enemy, it's right up against it to where like I need to be on the very edge. Tossing down
and
at
hope it.
It
doesn't clip into the
into the geometry. It. Eventually, yeah. It jumped up on top of the gazebo. With
yeah,
its
that
jump.
It's just a countdown to that point. Yeah,
I scrambled out, ran out onto the main street. There was one of the like night enemies that I hadn't killed. That it just like this. Frank is all across the entire area.
I'm not going to make Glenn do it, but it would be ideal to have yakety sacks. Yeah, exactly. Precisely. Ben, you and I.
that is completely what it was. And the happy end is that it did wind up with me getting that final blow in with the rapier. It was one of those moments where like there's the sliver of health left and you're like, damn it, I'm closing my eyes and mashing R1 and whatever happens, happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it broke in my favor this time. And, you know, Luke and I cheered. And it
was, last refuge of scoundrels. I think you might have just made Luke into a Soulsborne fan.
I kind of wanted to offer him up the controller after that, but that meant I would have had to stop playing. So
yeah, sure.
if I do get him to sit down and try it, I'll have to like record it and see, because he's a thrasher, you know, when he's fighting in Fortnite and there's an intense moment. We have cameras now, so I can do this, but it
looks like he's fighting off a bunch of bees. Yeah,
exactly. Which we talked about earlier, how
in
hard
the green
that
room
is,
yeah,
in the green room. So I think the challenge for him will be keeping those reflexes under control, which honestly, half the time, that's the challenge for me.
Yeah,
there's a surprising amount of jump scenes in this game.
I mean, go ahead, Ben.
Have you thought about whether to start them on like Dark Souls versus Elden Ring, or?
Well, I thought I'd solicit some advice. Like, go ahead.
You've got to start with Dark Souls to go to Elden Ring, because you know that teaches an important life lesson in disappointment. I'm sorry. No.
Now everybody can see me shaking my head, which I do all the time.
Okay, that's the career naysayer. What
about no. I don't know. The only thing I'd say is make sure Bloodborne at some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not even thinking that about one, like. Oh, good.
Oh, sorry. That one might be a little gory.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's crazy crap everywhere. It's.
Yeah.
The trade-offs is like Dark Souls, it's like the space is simpler, so there's like only a few different ways that he can go at any given time, but Elden Ring, he can like grind in level so that he can like rise to any level. So
also Elden Ring,
definitely not Dark Souls 2 where the enemies will stop spawning.
Right.
Also Elden Ring does a really good job, much better than the previous games, of like, whatever build you want to do, getting you the things you need for that real early. Like, you know, if you're like, I want to be giant sword haver guy, you know. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the person who underestimates your middle child, Dennis, but he's, what, 9?
Yep.
Okay. I think it might be a little bit too early for him to play it himself. I don't, you know, he might have it. But instead of, like, leaving him to sink or swim with it, I was just thinking about like, oh, he's a fan, just like this is something you guys could do together, and be a co-pilot on it, you know, like as you like, you know, read the little bits of story and you know look at the world, and you can be like, oh, look over there, kind of stuff.
He loves armchair quarterbacking that stuff, so that would be good. The other thing is I know Luke well enough to say he would immediately go to be arrows. He loves bow and arrow.
Those are not especially viable in Elden Ring.
So. Yeah, might be a problem. Yeah. They're not especially viable in Minecraft Dungeons, but that has not stopped Luke.
I love though now with you know what you guys are talking about. I now just have this mental image. I want someone to make the no thank you evil of Soulsborne games.
Yeah, the kid oriented TTRPG.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah. And now you can see me Google stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'll have to report back, but the next generation has been intrigued.
I just thought introduce them to another crab's treasure, which is basically the same. I don't know if it's easier, but I think it does have accessibility stuff.
Yeah, on base level, I found it miles more difficult than the Souls. in that it is one where like it basically revolves around perfect parrying.
Oh yeah, no, that's I don't know. But regardless, I'm happy you were having fun playing Elden Ring with your son.
Yeah, the entry point, there's a layup one that I already did kind of play with them, is Tunic. That's that's perfect.
Yeah,
you know, every kid loves decoding a crypto language.
I didn't say we finished Tunic. I said we played it. So yeah, but that's got a bit of Soulsborne DNA in the combat system at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will report back. And that and Nine Kings is what I've been playing this week.
Cool.
Sick. You joke about the crypto language, but I think fondly of like playing Myst as a kid when I was far too young to play it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but you're Ben, so.
Oh my gosh.
JK, heart.
See, I'm just scared that this is going to mean like kids being obsessed with crypto, so.
Oh no.
No crypto, I don't care what kind.
Have to disentangle those. And Ben, I also played Myst too young. I think I still have the copy of Myst for the Sega Saturn that I borrowed from my cousin.
And you got Myst for Walkabout Golf VR as well, so.
I do, yes. Yeah, God, I need to pick that back up. they definitely have new courses now. Anyway, you talked, Ben, so you volunteered to go next.
Sure. I just got one. It's a pretty small one, but it's a game called Voxelgram. Let me check that that's the right name. This is a game that was recommended from a friend who knew that I played Dungeons and Diagrams in Last Call BBS.
Okay.
But it's basically like a Picross type game, except
it's 3D. Yeah, it's Picross 3D. Yeah.
God.
So I'm not sure if this is like the de facto version of that game or this game has existed in a bunch of different iterations or not, but this is at least my entry point into it. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the only feature beyond the 3D aspect that it has is it has a really good, good with an asterisk hint system on it, where it'll kind of color code when there's information you have about a row, column, or whatever the third thing is, and whether or not you can do any sort of additional operation on it. So basically the way the controls work is left click highlights something green, meaning like you know that it needs to be there. Right click deletes it from the puzzle. And then I think that's it, actually.
It is like middle click, like I need to mark this one that I'm unsure, because like a lot of Picross games. Sorry, you've wandered straight onto my turf, Merkel.
it might. I don't know. I have not tried that. And then the generic layout of the game is it's like you pick a scene, and then within the scene there's like maybe 10 different puzzles that are like objects within this like diorama. So like one might be a kitchen and it's like breakfast items, or one could be like a farm and it's like different vegetables or chickens and stuff like that.
That's a bathroom. There's a rubber ducky.
So it's kind of a mixed bag for me, because the way that I went about playing the game is I played it for a while without realizing like how the hint system operated. And so I was purely taking things away and solving puzzles that way. And it was getting to a point where it's like my ratio was like maybe one or two per world. I kind of got to a place where I was stuck and didn't know where to go from there. And I would just go to the next puzzle and complete it that way. Once I figured out how the hint system worked, it was kind of like a blessing and a curse, where it's almost trivializes the experience, where you are thinking less now, because instead of getting like looking at the puzzle and kind of exploring like where you could take away something at, you can see what like rows or columns are highlighted, and you're like, okay, let me do work there. And then after you've done work there, guaranteed something else is highlighted at that point, and then you can go work there. And so really it takes like the puzzle solving out of it when you do that, when you engage with that system.
So does the hint system show you when you have it correct, or does it show you when you have it, when you have put in something that technically satisfies the key on the side?
The way it works is it'll gray out if you're in a point where there's no, like you don't have enough information to continue with it. The number will be with a font of gray. But if either you can mark something as guaranteed being there or take something out guaranteed, it'll be highlighted blue to know that there's something you could do with it. And sometimes it's not exactly straightforward, where it might be something where it's like six of these are highlighted and there's three gaps. But all that you need to know is like, oh, the ends are going to be highlighted because this is only like a 9 total width. So I know that that has to be the case. So sometimes it could be something that's maybe less obvious. But just the fact that it's telling you where you can solve things kind of takes a lot of the problem solving out. But at the same time, the problem spaces are so big, where some of the levels are like 10 by 15 by 20 or something like that, where it's not really feasible for you to solve it on your own, just because there's so much to check and it would take you so long to find out where you can actually solve something at. It's kind of like in a situation where I'm not sure what the best answer is. You need to either make puzzles that are simpler and not have it, or you kind of have this experience, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much you can
say. It's kind of in between.
Yeah.
3D Picross is hard, not just to put it, you know, to play it, but like I just have to imagine that like coming up with actual puzzles to to put in there,
that
kind of strike that.
The fact that the hint system exists probably to me means that they probably have some sort of programmatically way of telling if a puzzle works or not, like the same way that you could do with like Sudoku or something. And probably just iterate on different hints that you could give to try and figure that out, or maybe there's a way to work backwards, but
at the end of the trailer it talks about having random puzzles, so there seems to be some kind of programmatic element to this,
sure,
that like you could just generate these forever.
Yeah, I could believe that. Yeah, because it's like some of them are a little arbitrary where it'll be like, say, like a basket is the final thing that you're making. And there's just like weird squigglies inside of it that could be like, I don't know, just random things or whatever. And it's like, okay, I understand that that bit is probably what makes the puzzle work or makes it like a solvable puzzle. It's like editing whatever that is, that little free space.
What you're hitting on with the hint system is just something that's just true of Picross in general, both 2D and 3D, which is it is more of just like a pure, not logic, but like it's like a it's like a task list that you need, that you need to do almost. And like, I don't know, the appeal for me is not necessarily that there's something that you really have to like puzzle over, although some of them can be pretty tricky. With enough with enough time and, you know, just brute force, you're going to get through any of them. For me, just the act of going through and deducing, like, okay, so here's, you know, I can just tell by looking at how these go, like, okay, this has every one of these accounted for, every one of the squares here, okay, like the order of operations on there feels like scratching an itch on my brain.
It changes like the gameplay of this from being like something where it's you're a lot in your head of like thinking different possibilities to it being something like it's on a second monitor where maybe you're listening to a podcast or something like that. And it's like you're kind of in the flow state going through the motion of solving. It's the same way that how I interact with like dungeons and diagrams, I think. Where that's something it's just like automated.
I'm not surprised that the Zachtronics version is a little bit more involved. Moxie, you were going to say something.
So for people who haven't played this, is this, it sounds like you're describing something similar to Minesweeper. Is that a similar experience?
Yeah, exactly. It's something where it's like you learn the rules of the logic, like to a certain point where you can just do it automated. And it's, I don't know what the term for this type of game is where it's like, it is scratching some sort of itch or like, I don't know. It's like a fidget spinner for your brain.
It's like a cross, like a crossword or Sudoku kind of thing. The thing that differentiates it from being purely like Minesweeper is that there is no like probability involved with anything, right? Where like you'll hit a square and then you'll get the number, and then the next one that you do before you get more information, like okay, it could be any one of these around here. On my second move, there's nothing that is like as high stakes as that.
This is perhaps
You don't want in a puzzle game a 15-minute session of painstakingly taking apart a board to end in a coin flip.
Right.
Question. So
I think that's a good thing.
I didn't realize you could do that in Minesweeper. Like I thought Minesweeper was a mathematically solved thing where if you solve it correctly, there will always be.
Because there's puzzles where you can the first click can be an 8, and so that is like, well, I'm just clicking in the blind wherever my second click is going to be. But it kind of get hyper focused on these puzzle type things. So like, there are certain like when you play Sudoku, for example, a lot of times it'll go down to like I'm going to try one branch and see if there's like a contradiction, and if there's a backup and go with the other assumption to make progress on it.
And a lot
of times you can do that with dungeons and diagrams as well. So one thing that is actually nice about this one is there's always a path forward. You never have to guess. Like you can always, like, there's always something you're missing if you don't have like a sure way forward. So I do appreciate that part of this one.
You can get yourself built up in such a way where like you made a wrong assumption very early on. And then that acted as like a seed for the crystal that grew wrong. So you have to start like untangling, just like rip it back out and say like, I can't remember exactly where I took a leap on this, but we've got to, you know, undo it. So like that refactoring, I think, is the part where it gets most like problem
tedious. Well, so that's the nice thing about the voxelgram though, is because they've generated puzzles like this, there's always like a sure way forward. You never have to, you're never forced to have to make a guess to try and figure out the puzzle. But anyway, so it's an okay game. If you like those types of games, go for
I wasn't aware of this. I have played all of the 3D Picross games, at least the official Nintendo ones. So I don't know.
I think it was on sale for $3. So like it's a very low risk investment. So
And there's a sequel, it seems, as well as DLC for at least the first one. So
I guess you're not my friend for recommended it so long ago that they've already made a sequel since this one.
Maybe.
So.
when did the second one come out? Shit, I'm really excited about these. No, the second one came out like yesterday. It came out on the 14th.
Oh, holy crap. Yeah, yeah, on the 14th. Yeah. Wow.
All right, I'm magooed myself into a topical conversation. So,
what's new in Voxel Grams 2?
I can't tell from the video.
No, I'm just, shit. I mean, you might not have liked it, but you described something I might really enjoy. Shit, I can just get the complete bundle for like $10. Hell yeah.
Yep.
You've it's got like yourself a sale. Yeah.
That's how we do it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Moxie, how about you?
Man, I don't really have anything too interesting. Been continuing on with Witchfire a little bit. A little bit more The Division 2. A little bit more Fall in London, but like none of those really much anything. I think the biggest thing is played a fair amount of Darktide with Dennis.
Okay.
I finally got around to playing the new class, which everything's in Latin, so I have no idea if it's like the Arbites or something. I know, it's something that basically means I'm a cop.
Okay.
And I think I've mentioned this before, like the outfit is straight up just, oh, this is Judge Dredd. And you have this like horribly misbegotten cybernetic dog that fights with you.
I'm seeing RoboCop. I'm seeing... I could legally see actionable RoboCop on this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Say very similar. Yeah. Yeah. That sort of thing. It's a little weird. I'm interested to see how this ends up being with, like, you know, sometimes games like these, the expansion characters are just better.
Yeah. They've had more time to design them.
Right. And I'd be interested to know because, like, in particular, the fact that you, like, have an attack dog that's helping you is just on top of everything else you get. So, like, you still have a special ability. It's not like attack dog is your special ability.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see how balanced that is.
Maybe the balance is you just have more to take, more to concern yourself with. That, there's that more to keep track
be.
Of.
That could be. I do like having one to help me. One of my favorite things is there's a achievement you get where this game's equivalent of like the hunter in Left 4 Dead or the gutter runner in Vermintide, the like sneaky character that will tackle you and someone has to help you or you die. This game's equivalent of that is a hound. And so there is an achievement for your hound rescuing you from the hound.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
I have to say, though, you'll have to tell me if it's better when you are the one controlling the hound. I constantly mistake the Arbites dog for a bad hound.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a good thing there is not friendly fire on the level we're playing because I would kill that dog so many times.
Yeah, I would say...
Gonna snip that.
Oh no,
I would kill that dog so many times.
Hey, you could be the next head of Homeland Security.
That's right.
Dream big.
But no, yeah, it to the point where it almost feels to me like bad game design, just because like this is a game that very core is about like learning silhouettes and reacting to them instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And so like having something in it that just doesn't silhouette well, or at least compared to the other things, seems kind of almost seems like a game design mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
have you figured out what it means when you get like the warning sound of like the whack right before something bad happen? I can't figure out what the game wants me to do. Like you'll be in the middle of fighting and there's very distinctly an alarm sound. Mm-hmm. That's like the the best analog I can think of is the Senua's Sacrifice or Hellblade, when like the voices in your head whisper like "Watch out!" when someone from off screen is about to hit you.
Good.
And that happens constantly in Darktide, and I don't know what the game wants me to do with it.
Yeah, I don't.
Is that a dodge forward thing? Is that an attack thing? Is that a?
Or I don't know. Maybe it's just a like you are about to be attacked by something you currently don't have on screen.
Yeah, maybe. I have not found a way to like effectively react to that yet.
I know like Left 4 Dead had a musical cue that it played for every single special infected when they spawned in.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know if there's anything like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do feel like thematically, I'm not sure what I think of this character, because the rest of the game is very much about like, you know, all your characters are kind of the rejects of the 40K world and like, you know, that sort of thing. So like pairing them up with a cop seems kind of weird.
I don't know.
But yeah. Unless we're going to make a buddy cop film, you know, one's loose cannon.
Well, of course, but he gets results.
Exactly.
Obligatorily. No, one is a loose cannon, the other gets results. Nobody knows why they keep the first one around.
that's all I've got.
Cool. I have two short ones. They're both streamies. They're both ones that I played on stream. And both relatively new. The first one is a game called Threshold. This came out in November of 2024, and I saw it talked up as being a good like PS1 visual style horror game with a bunch of secrets. The concept is this is in a dystopian world or whatever, where you are working a job high up in a mountain outpost, so high that you can barely breathe, and you need to make sure that a train that has been running for 500 years keeps moving at the correct pace through your outpost. Okay. It never stops. If it stops, it's bad. If it goes above or below, that's bad. You speed it up by blowing a whistle into a microphone. The problem is doing that exhausts your breath, and so does like running around and just existing up there causes your breath to run out. The only way to extend that is to breathe out of small little canisters that are dispensed for doing little odd jobs while you are just waiting in the back of your mind for the big alarm that says everything is about to go wrong. Is going to happen. So you might be like down to your last air canister, barely enough to, you know, to whistle, about to do the thing that is going to, get you the next air canister. And then you have to drop everything and not run, but walk. So you have enough air left to get back to the microphone, to blow the whistle. And a few people in the chat kind of like hopped onto the same thing that I did, which is this is a stress dream simulator.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like there is something that you are absolutely responsible for. And every time you go to do anything else, even things that are necessary for your continued existence to do this job, something calls you back to the thing. Like I've had this exact dream about getting phone calls. I've had the same dream about working at GameStop and, like there's always somebody coming up to the register when I'm trying to do stuff. Yeah, no, like it just, it is like a stress job, a stress dream about a terrible job. Hmm. The reason it kind of falls into horror is because there's very obviously something fucked up going on here. And while you are doing these things, you know, performing small tasks in order to earn the right to breathe, and keeping the train going at the right pace, you start like poking at stuff to like see evidence left by the person that you're here to replace who died mysteriously. This is a short game. It's about like 2 hours. I went through it and I got a good number of the endings that were available in it. It's really neat. It captures something that I don't see captured that often. Like, I don't know. I can't remember the last time I described a game as a stress dream simulator.
Maybe Mini Metro after you've been playing for like a half hour.
Yes.
Trying to stay on top of it.
That might be it. Trying to keep a half hour run going in Mini Metro.
Yeah. I just want to shout out that the trailer for this game says based on a true story.
Yep. Always a fun little trick. Yeah. Yeah. And also like at the beginning, you have to pick a flag, like flag of like a real world nation, but it doesn't impact the language that it plays in. It just says it affects the difficulty and it does not explain how.
Huh.
Yeah. So I have no idea. Like I did the whole game on Spain mode. Cause I was like, of the options here, Spain seems pretty middle of the road.
You load up and choose a different flag and it's like a dating simulator, like just completely different.
What the fuck is going on in Spain? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that like some year I'm going to tune into Good Games Done Quick. It's going to be this game, like German mode, no bratwurst.
Oh man, Philippines, any percent? Yeah.
I'm looking at screenshots and there's one that just, I don't know why, but it's enraptured me. It's, you know, just a random screen. It seems to be, the guy seems to be staring at like a net or maybe a tiled wall. Hard to tell with the PS1 graphics.
It's a grating. You have to go and collect white matter from the grating that the river running out of where the train is going to.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, the inventory item is bucket and the caption is, there's still some room in that bucket.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things you have to do. You have to clean that grating because some mysterious white viscous substance accumulates on it. No. Yeah. And, I never let it get bad enough to where like things became a problem. Also the fast
another spooge
kinda, it's just called white matter. And also the faster the train goes, the rougher the tide of the river is. So it's harder and takes more breath to get down there and then get back up. Yeah.
Huh.
Everything
about it is a fucking nightmare. Playing this game? This sounds awful.
So is this fun?
You eventually get the hang of it. It's a living.
I see you're not answering my question, and I
yeah. Is any job fun? Come on. Mm. So it's neat. You know, I'm not spoiling anything. Like, you know, just the vague. A game that looks like this, where there are like mysterious bloodstains in places and you need to work in order to have the privilege to breathe, you know something fucked up is happening. So that's not spoiling things to say you're going to find out what it is.
Which of us have not had that first job?
I know, right? Yeah,
go ahead.
As I say, the atmosphere seems like one of the huge selling points of this. And like, it seems similarly oppressive to like the Arctic and like the Thing, you know? So it's like, it seems like a great idea for a horror game.
That you have one other person who is there with you, like a coworker who is supposed to be splitting the duties, but mostly just excuses himself, because there is no, because there's very little oxygen, like nobody can talk. He has a notebook, but you were not issued one. So like he writes stuff down to you and shows it to you. It's like a weird, it's a weird atmosphere.
Yeah. I think it says something fundamental about human nature, where, you know, the second you get some capacity or, you know, pun intended, breathing room beyond just like the basic survival, you start poking around until you cause enough trouble to be on your heels again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. If, I was going to spoil something. That was another, that was another human nature thing. it might've just been a me thing, but I'm pretty sure everybody would have the, I'm pretty sure everybody would have the inclination that I had that ultimately let me proceed.
Hey, go watch the stream if you want to see more, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, the other one is another small indie horror game called Eyes on the Exam.
Oh, yeah, I did catch this one. That was crazy.
Yeah, this is fun. I saw it on New and Trending, and I needed something short. I've been streaming so many long games recently. So I was like, okay, we'll do two-hour games. Eyes on the Exam, it feels like made for streaming. What this is, you are a student in a classroom. Your teacher is a gigantic spider with an old lady's face. And if she spots you looking up from your exam paper, a red light flashes and you have a small amount of time to look back down. If you don't look back down, you die.
Oh, that's so much worse than insta-death.
Yeah. So, and like the window gets shorter and shorter each time, it happens. The problem is you, like none of the questions on the test are answerable without information that is available in the classroom around you. Okay. It's not like asking, like, it's not Carmen Sandiego. They're not asking like geography questions. actually, there's one question that could be a little bit geography, but that is, it's fanciful. It's made up.
You have to, like, which country is the hardest mode in Threshold?
Exactly. It's a tie-in that came out at roughly. So this one came out more recently. It came out like in July. So you're looking around and the questions are like, you know, what is the name of the student with, you know, the red backpack? And you have to like look and see, okay, that one has a red backpack. Cool. There are no name tags on them or anything. And you look around and you realize on the wall behind you is a seating chart. Okay. Well, how is it oriented? And this is timed too. I think you have like five minutes. and so like you need to put all this stuff together. The exam ends after 10 questions. And to kind of like raise the stakes, the big teacher spider, she doesn't move around like in real time. It'll be, she'll be in a position for several seconds. And then the lights go out. And then the lights come back up and she's in a different position. Maybe she's facing away from you. So you've got a little bit more free rein to look around. However, there's one fewer students in the classroom.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The questions start getting pretty complicated. People in the stream were saying like, oh, there's like big blueprints energy on this, in terms of some of the things that it's asking you to do, up to and including using cues on the blackboard and in kind of like the teaching materials around you to decode a number system to like answer arithmetic questions.
That seems excessive.
It took me a little bit, but I beat this game within, I got a perfect 10 and got the, you know, secret endings and stuff within 2 hours. So you're only like, you only need to find, 1 through 9. It's just those digits. And the clues are like pretty clear. Like you'll see a square or something. And, like there'll be a mark for like what one of the sides kind of like lengths is. And then like, there'll be a symbol for the area. So that one side is marked 2. This area is obviously, well, whatever the square root of, you know, I just need to square that. And then, okay, that's cool. This thing that looks like an upside down Y, I know what number that is. And that might be a thing that helps you unlock something else. You're not meant to solve all of this in just one go. This may be a little bit of a mark against it. The questions and all of the like clues and stuff stay the same. I don't know if it's the same across like boots in the game, but like within an individual run, the information is the same. So like, you know, my index card, assuming I booted up and stuff, is still the same. My index card of the number code would just have you, would just give you the answers that you would need, you know, for like for those. Same thing with like when it asks you like how many of X object are in the room, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's going on with the being able to like spin or knock off the pencils on your desk?
Oh, you can do some fidgeting.
There's okay. Also, it's not like that will distract the teacher or reset the timer on when she moves or anything.
I didn't like see. I knocked it off and assumed it and nothing happened. So I just assumed it was just a little thing to do. There's one pencil you can knock off the desk, and there's another pencil that you can spin on an eraser. There are some like hidden object, like minor adventure game puzzle things that you're trying to do to solve in this to get the extra endings. But you know, there's enough game here. Just trying to figure out what the answers to these questions are.
Yeah. Well, weren't there also?
Oh, sorry. Hmm?
Weren't there also some questions where you had to do some stuff to get the information? Like, you know, you had to like open a window or, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So like you just say like what's on the TV and you have to like look over at the TV and see that there's a button and then just clicking on the button. You don't have to like get up and get over while avoiding the gaze of the teacher. Mm. You just have to click on it. Yeah.
How long did this game take in total?
2 hours. I think I maybe stayed over like 10 minutes to get the true ending, something like that. Yeah. It's a fun little snack. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe kind of want to play Blueprints.
Wait, have you played that yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
I know, right? Yeah. So, yeah, Eyes on the Exam. It's neat. Don't let teacher spider see you. And those are the two that I have.
Very cool.
Any other questions about those?
When are you going to play the Blueprints on stream?
Oh fuck, I'm not going to do that. I can't have people knowing how stupid I actually am.
You need a secondary camera that's set up to view your notepad.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody's done that with a document cam. Yeah.
It's not, I will say it's not as bad as most puzzle games because it's things that it's not outright puzzles that you have to solve. It's about kind of like managing resources more. I think you'd be fine.
But. Okay. I'm still not confident enough to do that.
Fair.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, shout out to Aaron from our Slack for the suggestion on this. Love it when people write in question ideas, and some people have been really good about that. So it's fun to have people to brainstorm with. But this one's about surprises, not necessarily jump scares, but when you, a genre, you are either surprised at how much you like it versus what you expected or how much you don't like it versus what you expected. So what genre of games most surprised you that way, for better or worse?
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Case, who says booking simulators. And I had no idea what this was. I continue. When I was in middle school and high school, and to a lesser degree to this day, I was really into pro wrestling. However, most of how this manifested in my gaming was through playing games like the SmackDown and Fire Pro series, the latter with translation patches in emulation. I had fiddled with various manager sims at the time, but it generally bounced off of them, and I stumbled into a little freeware DOS game called Extreme Warfare Revenge by a
that's
guy
a
named
name.
Yeah, I would not guess that is a wrestling game. Yeah, let alone a wrestling game about hiring and firing people. Extreme Warfare Revenge by a guy named Adam Ryland. It let me put together wrestling shows over various in-game months. And it had real wrestlers, some that I'd heard of, like the Dudley Boys and Steve Austin, and some random indie guys I hadn't heard of, like AJ Styles or Bryan Danielson. And it would give move-by-move match synopses. It was great. I occasionally still dabble with booking sims now, but those ate up a bunch of my PC gaming time throughout high school and into college. in addition to also bringing me to various fan sites like Death Valley Driver Video Review. Apparently, Tony Khan, the owner of AEW, has a similar path, except he also comes from money, so he could afford to actually jump into that, to starting his own wrestling promotion. Yeah, no, he can play that video game with real people's livelihoods. Fun.
That's literally the GLOW storyline.
Is it really?
Yeah, just a rich playboy man-child is super into wrestling, and so naturally, you know, starts his own thing.
Okay. I've been afraid to watch GLOW because it has Alison Brie as a wrestler, and I am afraid that I will get such a strong nosebleed that I will die in like an anime horny sense. I had never heard of these. I had never heard of these games. I need to see, is this like text or something? Yeah. Sometimes it takes is just the right theme to get you. Yeah.
It is right. Red and blue text boxes, very clearly from the early DOS days before anyone gave a shit about UI design.
But they have Steve Austin in there too. Oh, this is Windows 90. This is like Windows 3 or Windows 95 core. Go ahead, Moxie.
So this almost reminds me of, what was that, like Blaze Ball or whatever?
Oh, the fake baseball.
Yeah.
With like teams made of spiders and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. Sounds cool. Shit.
I'm just impressed that wrestling booking specifically can be a genre. Like, they don't say it got them into like management sims. Like, there's Football Manager and whatever.
Yeah.
But like, very specifically, there are enough different wrestling booking games out there to support this.
To make it a genre. Oh, this is a whole series. Yeah. Total Extreme Wrestling came out in like 2020. And there was one in 2024. Like, it's they're all by the same dude.
Yep.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, and it was developed as a collectible card game. Yeah. No, I just like, okay, management sim in general, but like you find the right one with like the subject matter area that you're interested in, and you just roll with
it. Oh yeah.
I say this as a management sim pervert. let's see here, Ben, what does Rizana say?
Rizana says, roguelikes. My first experience was Isaac because of Guppy, but my hands and brain don't do so well with the twin stick style of it, and I couldn't make progress. Turns out I enjoy roguelikes in the vein of Hades, Ravenswitch being the one I'm currently working through. Plenty of text to explain exactly what items do instead of guessing, and a play style I feel I have more control over and can react to.
Yeah. And I'm sure somebody who is even less capable with their hands finds like a Monster Train or a Slay the Spire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's discrete options and yeah.
Yeah. Not in real time. Yeah.
Man, Raven's Watch has such a cool gameplay loop too.
Hmm.
It's like, I know, if you wanted to stick a roguelike inside your roguelike.
Hmm. Okay. I had never heard of this. Huh. Let's see, back to Blue Sky. I read the longer one, because we don't have too many responses. Moxie, what does Michael say?
Michael says, tactics or strategy RPGs like Final Fantasy Tactics or Tactics Ogre. I thought I would love them because most have fantasy or medieval settings with intriguing stories. But I usually get a few missions in and realize I don't like fiddling with a lot of systems and planning ahead with jobs and abilities. Basically, I want to read the story without playing the game.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense.
I had kind of a similar experience for different reasons in that I loved Ogre Battle. Assumed I would like Tactics Ogre because it's just the other half of the same series.
Very different games. Yeah.
Oh, very different games. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, well, Tactics Ogre is kind of like an auto battler almost.
Other way around. Ogre Battle is auto battler. Sorry. Tactics Ogre is like a Final Fantasy Tactics like.
Yes. Came before Final Fantasy Tactics, made by the same guy.
Yes. Although I was hoping to like get some trolls after me.
Oh, sorry.
No, you'll only get ogres after you with that.
Oh, you know.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there are ogres in either game, weirdly.
So they're, weirdly enough, they're like doomsday creatures in this series.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the anime has broken me where like every show has their name for the demon or whatever. And it's
right.
So I was like, oh, these are ogres. These are shadows. These are. And so no noun now means anything specific.
Everything's in terms a potential of what monster demon. That
it evokes. Yeah. Yeah.
Dennis finishes out with Double Cakes.
Yes, Double Cake says point and click adventures. When I first got into Duck Feed shows and a lot of the genre were common talking points on podcasts in the community, I checked out a few of them but quickly grew to dislike them. Fast forward 10 plus years later and I play a game called Beyond the Edge of Owlsgard and the genre clicks for me. In many point and click adventures, the player gets familiar with an intimate and expertly illustrated intimate and expertly illustrated space as they try to solve puzzles, and I gelled with that game more than the comedic ones I tried years ago. Now I'm pointing and clicking with the best of them.
Oh, nice. I would want to hear if like they went back to the ones that they bounced off of and like suddenly got the comedic ones, or if there have been enough like, I don't know, Wajit Eye style serious dramatic ones that they've been able to kind of find their own niche in that.
How much appetite do you have for pun-based puzzles?
I mean, not infinite, but I don't know. I like Ron Gilbert games.
Yeah.
So because I only ever talk about four games, I did not expect that Guitar Hero would get its hooks into me when it did. I did not really enjoy like DDR, like, you know, just rhythm games just never really, you know, hooked me. I think that I played Parappa the Rapper and enjoyed it, but that was more because of the art and the music, not actually because of the play. I got no rhythm, nothing. But Guitar Hero comes out and I think, okay, like I've tried Guitar Freaks like in the arcade, and that plastic guitar was neat, but I didn't like any of the music. But here we have a plastic guitar, which is, you have the novelty, and then like looking at the track list in the original Guitar Hero, there's a Queens of the Stone Age song, band I really like, you know. And so I was like, all right, well, I want to kind of give this a shot. And I went with my girlfriend to Best Buy just to see if they had it, and we sat down and played it and we like hogged it, and then immediately when it came out, I was like, okay, I need this. I got a copy for a good friend. It's like, yeah, love this. And now I play rhythm games all the time. I had no interest in playing guitar up until that point. Like, I have no idea. It was literally just the novelty of it, and I was like, oh, this can probably work. Yeah, so like I'm one of those mythical people that played Guitar Hero and thought, oh, well, I should probably just play real guitar too. And then I decided to play both.
It's I think, oh, go ahead.
I'm surprised you didn't go with Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah, I've told that story a lot. I'm putting that one on cooldown a little bit.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah,
that I think that might have been one of my earliest impressions of you was because we were in a dorm like across the hall from each other right when Guitar Hero 2 came out.
Oh my God, I was a fiend.
Like, and it was like, everyone sit down and shut the fuck up. I'm playing Guitar Hero 2. Let's go. And
precisely my energy. Weirdly accurate the way that you represented how I was.
Like, yeah, that is the most excited I've ever seen someone for a game release.
It wasn't even that. Like, I was waiting, like, for my mom to send me a copy of the magazine that had, like, the three-song demo for it.
Yep.
And like, I took, like, an hour-long bus ride out and then an hour-long bus ride back from the campus to Rookwood. Up by Hyde Park in Oakley, to the closest GameStop, the one where I worked, in order to get it and then bring it back with a second guitar so we could play it multiplayer.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I kind of came on more on the timing for Guitar Hero 3. Mm-hmm. But you definitely, played a role in getting me as into those games as I was.
Yeah.
Y'all, like, That was half a lifetime ago.
Almost literally, that was 2006.
Not with how long I'm planning on living. that's only like maybe a tenth of a lifetime.
Yeah. That was 19 years ago. Yeah.
I'm gonna live to be 500.
Yep. No, a fraction of a fraction. It's fine. Blink of an eye.
Maybe in that time you'll be able to beat through the fire and flames.
I already beat that. I beat that. That's on Guitar Hero 3, so that has like the really lax hammer-on pull-off
so
timing.
Generous.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Ben.
This seems too easy to piggyback, so I'll just say the same thing, but for drums, playing Rock Band at your house, okay? And then, because there was a drum set at my home that my roommates had, and so it's like, oh, it's just this? All right, I'm going to go home and do that too.
and for the listeners, Ben is just vaguely miming, like almost like a cartoon.
Drum. Yeah.
He's keeping the beat. I really didn't have any interest in drumming either before Rock Band, and that gave me the bug too.
Is this the question where we all realize that Kay systematically pulled us into video games?
I want to see how many of these I'm responsible for. Oh boy, it's like a superhero origin, but it's all me. Moxie, how about you?
So I think mine is somewhat similar because it's been half a lifetime ago and console names mean nothing. I got a PlayStation, whichever one had Dark Souls. And
okay, all right. So that's not only three. Your mom told me, hey, I'm getting Moxie a PlayStation 3. She called me and was like, what game should I get them? And I said, oh, Dark Souls is a pretty good one. Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly where I'm going
with
this.
Holy shit. This is breaking my brain right now.
Yep.
Oh man. you kind of bounced off of it, didn't you? Like you hit the depths and then.
So all Dark Souls games, I don't know why, or Soulsborne games, I like play pretty significantly, bounce off hardcore, and then like years later come back to.
Yeah, it's the incubation period. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably about due for Elden Ring, so.
Give it a shot. I don't know. Dennis, don't disappoint me now.
No, I won't. So I will say I had a negative example in mind, like something I expected to really like. And
I want to hear both. So
yeah. So generally like survival games. I remember fanboying out so hard on Nightingale when they announced it, which is like a survival crafting game that is very like fey and fantasy themed.
Yeah, this is recent, right?
Yeah, only a couple of years ago, or like maybe a year ago. And in that genre, generally, like, oh, Don't Starve, that looks so freaking cool, and craft your base, Valheim, oh my god, looks so amazing. Every time I talk myself into like this is the one that I'm really going to click with,
right?
And then I can't get into survival crafting.
Okay.
I think it is my reach exceeds my grasp on the side of what I want to create.
Mm-hmm.
And
stuff
that,
being like out of your reach frustrates you.
Yeah. Well, and add to that the friction of you also have to do like the grinding and surviving to
keep your meters
upkeep stuff. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so now I'm trying to find the time to do something that I'm not going to be as good at as I want.
Right.
Right. Like I can't do it, even though I love the idea of it. Like, I don't know, that one I always bounce off of, but I am a little wimpy boy when it comes to horror. I can't do it. Don't All like right. horror movies. Don't play horror games. I think Mario Kart has a few too many jump scares for me. You know, that kind
there
of
are
deal.
Ghost house levels. There are ghost house levels.
But when we were in the dorms together, I had a PS2. I was looking for new stuff to play. And Kay was like, why not Silent Hill 2? The scariest fucking game that was out at the time. And I got into it to the point that I wouldn't just play it. But I would wait until everyone else in my dorm was asleep and turn off all the lights and play in the dark, like as scarily as possible.
Yeah. I remember coming over and like watching when you were playing in the, like in the hotel. Level. Yeah.
I got deep into that.
I remember you bringing me over when it was like the hangman area with like the horse galloping and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one hall where there's just breathing, and I could not bring myself to go down it. But like, that's not me. I don't do that. But Silent Hill got me that way.
Nice.
Or excuse me, Silent Hill 2 got me that
specifically.
Way.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so you ran the table. Congratulations.
So was this before or after you played Dead Space? Because I remember that one also.
No, Dead Space was after. PS3, so that was finally after.
Yeah, Dead Space was 2008, and this was 2006.
Yeah. Okay. But that's the thing. I never would have looked twice at Dead Space
if you didn't.
Playing Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
And I mean, a whole raft of games share that kind of status. So,
awesome. Figure. I don't know. Well,
we owe a lot to Kay, the podcast, our gaming careers.
you guys would have found stuff that you liked.
We're still trying to figure out if she uses her powers for good or for evil, but, you know, there's definitely powers there.
I use them for fun. That's fine. Dennis,
we're gonna die and wake up in the afterlife, and it turns out Kay is God this whole time. It's like,
No. Yeah. that's wonderful to hear.
Good question to Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much, Aaron, for suggesting that. Thank you, Dennis, for posting it. And thanks to everybody who responded for responding. If you would like to participate in these, go to Blue Sky and follow the Level Podcast.bsky.social and watch for those prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for the End Boss, where we talk about what's happening in the world of video games and how we feel about it. I'm going to throw to Moxie first, because this one, based on the headline, seems like kind of a bummer.
It's not exactly great. I mean, yeah. I guess there could be worse things in the world, but 87% of game developers are apparently using AI agents in their workflow. And
I already have a note. No, AI agents, that's a marketing term. Those don't exist.
Well,
there is
true. Very true. Yeah. Like 97% say it is, quote, reshaping the gaming industry.
Reshaping is a value neutral.
Yes, it is. Verb.
Yeah,
it is a very diplomatic term. So there's a huge breakdown. Those are kind of the headline, like, numbers. But there's actually a huge breakdown of people being like, this percentage of people use it during their play testing.
Yeah.
You know, this percentage for this, so on.
A lot of this might also be gerrymandering anything related to machine learning or like just algorithmic or procedural stuff into AI.
That's
right.
Probably
because
true.
Like people have been using bots and like auto solvers and stuff to play test shit for years.
That's true. That is true.
So are you telling me that the giant corporation that's made billions of dollars of bets on AI might be thumbing the scales?
So I don't know that they are. A new survey by Google Cloud and the Harris Poll. Yeah. They might actually also be counting just using Google Gemini, which has replaced other shit and has been shoved into everything. So I don't know that this feels like a marketing push to say like, oh, look at all these other developers using Gen AI. That's cool. Might not be the case.
I think just my takeaway is, everyone laughed and called me a curmudgeon when I said that video games are objectively getting worse. But who is laughing now?
Yeah. The report also discovered that AI has changed how teams collaborate on key tasks, such as problem solving, quality control and testing, and speed of prototyping and iteration. Yeah, I'm not going to call bullshit. I just think that this is marketing.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally marketing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, more people having access to more tools is a good thing. But you know, this is also all built on the back of stolen material, etc.
Not gonna lie, I will say, like, I'm mixed on, like you said, on AI in terms of, like, you know, some of the, you know, copyright infringement and stuff like that. I have been impressed with some of my coworkers that, you know, use AI, whether they, you know, the ones that, like, built into the code editors. Mm-hmm. Some of those are pretty impressive.
Yeah. I don't know.
You guys can tell me if this is like a culturally insensitive analogy. He said, okay. Wincing. But I feel like the artists that kind of got used to train AI were a bit in the position of like Native Americans, you know, getting trade offers from Europeans. You know, like, oh, hey, yeah. You know, yeah. I'll give you this, you know, blanket and you give me all your land.
Yeah,
or what have you, and just like not having a context for what really was going on, and then on the back of me, like, no, that was kind of fucked up. What in the world?
So this isn't even like stakes were higher in that situation. Clear,
obviously,
I acknowledged, but also like it wasn't the artist like agreeing, like, hey, yeah. you can do this. It was almost like a lot of it is just straight up stolen. Like, well, there was no pretext of a deal.
It wasn't a transaction.
Yeah.
Well, and now in a weird situation where, like, you know, the class action has now made it to court and it will straight up, like, it's the largest class action that's ever happened in America.
Yeah.
And it would straight up like bankrupt all these companies because,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I know, yeah. it's one of those situations where it's like, it's okay to do an illegal thing as long as stopping you would be sufficiently detrimental to the economy.
Yeah, to the investors, not even to the economy.
Well, sure.
Yeah. I mean, Britain has changed their copyright laws. In order to say that AI training is not technically theft.
Something interesting.
Something that is also, I mean, just related to using tools for game dev and stuff like this, like the pervasive gerrymandering of everything into being AI, just like, you know, the labels on stuff has kind of started this, you know, let's call it like a false backlash where the general population is radicalized against AI. This is good. Mm. This is the position that I am in. However, there are people who are singling out creators who are seen to be using any sufficiently technologically advanced aid for their digital art.
Mm-hmm. Right? 90% of the tools in Photoshop, you could do the mental gymnastics to call it AI.
Right. And Adobe has done the work for them on that, where, you know, they just said, oh, this is AI now or something like that. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I've seen ridiculous claims about things like, I don't know, like line straightening in a, you know, just like, oh, just like, you know, curve smoothing in like a drawing app or something like that, saying, you know, like almost literally like it's a witch burner kind of stuff. So like, the fuckery of the industry is creating an information environment where like innocent people are being swept up in it for using tools that in no way are actually generative or drawing from stolen work to do it. It's literally just machine learning stuff.
Yeah. It's because we're like in the AI bubble right now. Like we were saying the same thing 2 years ago about like blockchain and NFTs. And so it's like, in 2 years from now, it's like whatever works is going to work and whatever doesn't won't. And it's like people have moved on to whatever the next thing is.
Yeah. It makes me think of, the music industry where there was a big rash of people accusing bigger artists of like, hey, you stole my riff or like, hey, that actually comes from my thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, look, I'm sorry, those three chords are not actually
they're only 12 notes.
Yeah. There's only so many ways you can put those bad boys together. Or eventually it shook out where, you know, the artists, vast majority of artists that like, no, I got here on my own, here's how. And you know, it became very clear. And the couple of places where someone was like actually stealing something or doing something crappy like that, that came to light. So hopefully AI gets to the same place.
It goes to the Vanilla Ice v. Queen kind of thing there. It's also like similar to like just an authenticity war about, like, I don't know about you all, but like in the late 2000s, CDs that I would buy would like have guarantees that like, oh, no hard drives were involved in the production of this. Right. You know, big bands have said like, yeah, you know, just like, hey, this is not like electronic in any way, which is fine as an ethos or for something to prefer. But also that the other side of that is saying like, oh, so electronic artists are not doing real stuff. No.
Yeah, I remember actually having that conversation with my dad, because there's some video he liked that like it was, you know, mostly just a you know, just a fun, like, you know, non-electronic, you know, someone playing a song, that sort of thing. But like clearly a bunch of theming of like anti-electronic music. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to talk to my dad being like, no, so this one is a great video, but also here's why, like, it kind of makes my hackles rise.
Yeah. And it's like, if you're looking for not electronic, like the Who used an arpeggiator at the beginning of Bob O'Reilly, right? Like, it's, I don't know.
The one I remember is Auto-Tune.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, Cher, Cher did Life After Love. And then, and we're still stuck with that. Yeah.
Or T-Pain just leaned into it, you know?
Yeah, it became an aesthetic. I mean, Cher did that, you know, Cher doing that song with that effect turned all the way up was like her revealing that this technology existed. And then it became an aesthetic that everybody took, you know, took on.
Yeah. I mean, you already know what I mean if I say it looks like AI art. It's kind of already happening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, As a side note, if you haven't seen T-Pain's War Pigs,
okay,
amazing. Oh, so freaking good!
It shouldn't be, but it's really, really good.
His Tiny Desk concert's really good.
Oh, I have to check that out. That actually sounds fun.
My millennial ass talking about Tiny Desk concerts. the remaining three stories have to do with Gamescom, summer something or other, the big thing out in Germany, game announcements that are happening. Somehow Jeff Keighley got his hands on this one too.
He is the AI generated face of gaming now.
Oh my God, I can't stand it. I'll do mine first. I was real surprised to see John Carpenter is making a game that's coming out in 2026.
Wait, isn't John Carpenter like a fictional character?
No. John Carpenter's a real ass dude.
What's the John Carter? John, they tried to make a blockbuster John movie.
Carter, yeah, John Carter of Mars.
John Carter. I was like, I watched the trailer. I was like, it seems real. Like, how is this the John Carter?
Yeah, IP? No.
John Carpenter directed The Thing, the movie you referenced earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. This is all clicking into place now. It makes a lot more sense.
Moxie, we can't hear you. I think you're muted.
To give you an idea, John Carter of Mars is very much the type of movie that John Carpenter would make.
Yes.
Okay. So except it would probably be good. There.
Yeah. If he did it, it would probably be good. He's done horror stuff. Yeah. Yeah. He made They Live.
The Thing.
Mouth of Madness. I could just keep naming awesome John Carpenter movies. There's so many of them.
Precinct 13.
That's also really good.
did he do District 9 or was that someone else?
That's somebody else. That was a South African director. Yeah. So John Carpenter hasn't made a movie in a while. He has actually said he just wants to spend his time like doing drugs and playing video games, which rock on.
He does music, I think, too, still.
Yes. Yeah. He's been doing music, too. Speaking of synthesizer shit, love his soundtrack stuff. But this was a real surprise. I had no idea that this was coming. It's a game called Toxic Commando. His name's on it is John Carpenter's Toxic Commando. And it's coming out in 2026. I saw the trailer. I thought, oh, sweet, John Carpenter. And then I saw that it's a multiplayer co-op extraction shooter, and I got substantially less excited. But I'm still curious. Like, him being attached might get me to try it out, at the very least.
I just assumed this was a movie he made sometime in, like, the 70s or the 80s. And I was like, oh, no, never heard of that one.
Yeah. Nope.
I mean, also, the other thing to be excited about is it is developed by Saber. Yeah. Who does all of like the SnowRunner games.
I know, right?
And there seems to be like a significant portion of this that is like, you know, getting vehicles and getting them rideable and out of tough situations. So like,
trying to gain traction in a muck of rotten zombie flesh.
Yeah. How long do you try to dig out that car versus just turning and running?
Yeah.
So this is different than the Toxic Avenger.
Correct. Yes. Somebody
which they're making a movie of right now.
Yes. So different than that. This is Toxic Commando. So I am tentatively curious. It says there's going to be a single player mode. I want to see what kind of video game John Carpenter makes. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm not expecting a lot, but I'll check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish listed it. So, on to the next GameCom thing here. Dennis, what's happening in Napoleonic France?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Expedition 33 oeuvre seems to be spreading. Mm-hmm. I just kind of picked a game that stood out to me as like kind of piqued my interest in the cavalcade of trailers that was the Gamescom opening night. A game called Valor Mortis, and it is essentially the dark, gritty French aesthetic applied to Dark Souls.
Applied to Dark Souls with parkour stuff in it, because it's the Ghost Runner team.
Yeah, so there's no indication that there is parkour stuff in Valor Mortis, but it is the team that made basically like a Mirror's Edge game. So they prominent feature like from the team that brought you Ghost Runner. Mm-hmm. And I Ghost Runner did not stand out to me as like that a pedigree game, I guess.
It made me so fucking motion sick.
Yeah. So but maybe I should say this might be a little bit more of a Kingsfield alike because it is first person.
It's first person, yeah. It's mm-hmm. the combat looks a little bit too fast to be Kingsfield like.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. So maybe the Bloodborne of Kingsfield. I don't know. we'll see. But it is, as you said, kind of very set in Napoleonic France, to which like every character in the trailer is just an absolute caricature of French army people. Mm-hmm. Is a little Napoleon in their own right. Mm-hmm. They kind of do some fairly standard combat, although there are more bodies than you would expect littering the ground. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. You know, France got pretty fucked up for a while there.
Yeah.
And you know, they're doing the form ranks and fire kind of combat until someone in a golden mask gets shot and decides to inhale something that turns them into a Resident Evil monster.
Yep. Complete with a gigantic hand and what appears to be an eye in the palm. So
I mean, as you do.
I mean, it's straight up Godric the Grafted, the way he has like multiple hands holding muskets popping out of the back of his arm. Yes. So like it is Dark Souls, or at least Elden Ring in that case, as fuck. Mm-hmm. And really has me curious. From the little gameplay clips in the trailer, it feels like the way you dodge or block or parry is very important, because that more directly sets you up for what your counterattack is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, from a first person perspective, managing that is a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I could see this going either way. I'm excited about the vibes, which is all you can really go off of for a trailer like this.
Yeah.
But color me interested.
Doing it from a first person perspective is going to run up against something where a lot of the Souls combat or just like navigation and encounter stuff is about situational awareness. And that is hard to achieve in first person.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of it will factor in like how badly you are punished for first person making your life hard, you know? Right.
Will there be a mysterious sound that nobody can decide if it means somebody from off screen is going to attack you?
Yes. I was furiously searching through YouTube videos trying to find, I swear to God, I'm not crazy. at least not for that reason. Yeah. So this is apparently, over 100 days out. So look for it. God, I guess that gets us close to next year.
I think on Steam it says 2026.
Yeah. Look for it next year. And fingers crossed that this kind of delivers on the promise of Dark Souls, but French.
Now, there's been a couple of Dark Souls French Revolution games. One where you play as the robot. And
oh shit, steal something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's one where you're like inexplicably partnering up with Lovecraftian like deities to do some, I don't know. But I don't think
how French is Lies of P?
I mean, that is a French story, right?
That's Pinocchio? Pinocchio is Italian.
Is Pinocchio Italian?
Yeah.
Romance Souls, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all the same language. It's fine.
And that's why I argue.
Yeah. Severed Steel is the name of the one you were thinking of, I think. Nope. Different one. Wrong one. Regardless. Yeah. So interested in that. We'll see how it pans out. And Ben.
This is something that was announced. I know hardly nothing about it, but they announced there's going to be an announcement for Silksong, and that as of today, it's going to be under 48 hours from now. When this comes out, I think it'll already be known. But so people are speculating that it'll be a release date. Some people are speculating it's going to be sometime this year, but that is TBD.
I think it was.
It's canceled.
So the articles that I saw reported as fact, and so who knows, said that it was coming out this year. So I don't know if maybe the announcement will have a specific release date or something like that.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't have any gameplay to show at the keynote kind of trailer reveal thing is concerning.
I thought they did. Like, it was more in the form of like clips playing behind Jeff as he was hyping it.
Okay.
Which, you know, I know is not the ideal form of gameplay clips, but he specified, he's like, these are all new gameplay clips from not Hollow Knight, whatever, Silksong, that are, you know, will be playable at Gamescom.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So fingers crossed.
If it's playable, then yeah, we're gonna get impressions and stuff. So I don't know.
Which I think we've kind of covered in previous weeks, like, cannot live up to the hype and length of time that this game has been drugged past.
I've stopped caring. Yeah.
Stopped carrying water for Silksong.
Yeah. And I never really did, but yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. People who are listening to this already know, because I'm sure the internet lit on fire with whatever they put out concrete. Any other details?
Because it's canceled.
Right.
It'll be a Hollow Knight MOBA.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Silksong NFTs, everyone.
Yep. We're doing it again. Oh, fuck. Any other details on that, Ben?
Nope.
All right. How does everybody feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
the credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 555. This is the last time for 1,000 episodes that every number in the title, every episode number, is going to be the same. So it's going to be a while.
For,
yeah.
No, no.
We got to come back around.
111.
We just need. No, that doesn't count because of leap years.
I caught Kay in the middle of her bullshit, folks.
No, it's obviously bullshit. I make that joke every time there's a significant number. I think the last time we had a palindrome, I was like, it's the last time for this last time for like 500 that we're
yes,
gonna get it.
But that will slip past me all too often, and then I'll be like going up to bed and be like, hey, wait.
But at least now with the cameras on, I can see everybody.
Yeah.
Just gonna like tilt their head 45 degrees like a dog. yeah. So no episode next week. Yes. We'll be back after that. Go ahead. What?
I said yes.
Yes. For this show, you know what to do. Leave us ratings, reviews, tell your friends, talk about us on social media. All that's there. If you would like to see me, I'm going to be at the Portland Retro Games Expo, October. At least 17, or yeah, the event is the 17th through the 19th. We're going to be doing a panel on either that Saturday or Sunday. So details to come also about our meetup that we're going to be doing. Anything I'm forgetting? Mm-mm. All right. Well, thank you so much. I've been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at k.zone.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only wrote down one. I did it on Spain mode. Who else has one? Dennis.
Yeah. So comboing off of that, I had, Germany mode, no bratwurst, which I figured it was, I don't know if that was the exact phrase, but
uh-huh.
It might've just been Germany, no bratwurst, but
okay. Mode was definitely in there.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also had from early in the episode, anything besides hell.
What was that in relation to?
That's from the banter.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Talking about. This is too long, but I wrote down, I would have killed that dog so many times. and then finally I had Stress Dream Simulator.
Okay. Moxie, how about you?
I had two. I had a fidget spinner for your brain and Germany mode, no bratwurst.
Okay.
And now I really want some bratwurst.
Man, oh man, I missed the bratwurst festival over in Bucyrus. That was last weekend. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I just had German mode, no bratwurst. So I don't know if we need to rewind the tape on that or not, but.
Ooh. Okay. I like keeping it the nation state, Germany mode. Yeah. I think Germany mode, no bratwurst, stylized as, with a comma, in there.
I'm partial to that as well.
Okay.
Sounds delicious. Cool. opposite of delicious, I guess. I want bratwurst. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. No bratwurst, no deal. All right. It is decided.